WMEX Quincy, Boston. Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on with Jimmy J playing the greatest hits of all time.
WMEX Boston.
Just a dream, just a dream.
Just a dream.
All our plans and all our schemes. How could I think you'd be mine? I know that we could never last.
Never last.
Just can't seem to end the past.
End the past.
Just a dream, I dreamed in vain. You, I'd only live in pain. Your picture. Now I know it's too late for me.
Hi, this is Jimmy J, and this week on WMEX, my guest is a huge teen idol from the 50s and 60s. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a friend, Jimmy Clanton. Hey, what's happening, bud?
Hey, I'm doing all right. How about yourself and all your fans?
We're doing fine, but how's this coronavirus thing, pandemic, hit you? What's going on with you? Where are you anyway?
Well, it hasn't hit me personally, obviously, and in the area, in the Amish country where I now live, in the southern part of Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, we have 16 acres here in the rolling hills of the Amish farming country. So neighbors are few and far between. And so I get out and it's like a normal day for me. You know, I mean, we can't go out in the public. We understand that. But I can't say it's really affected me as far as getting around, which is wonderful for me, but it's a shame for so many others.
You get to go down to the fishing hole, though, I understand, once in a while.
Yeah, the Susquehanna River has a dam down here. It's about 15 minutes from my driveway. And so I go fishing down there. It's a very well-known river for smallmouth bass. And I love to catch them, and I release them right away.
Jimmy, what is swamp pop?
Swamp pop, the best way to put it, swamp pop is the combination of rock and roll and rhythm and blues. And the difference is that swamp pop always had horns in the band. For example, like the Rockets were the band that I kind of like co-founded with Dick Holler. We had guitar, drums, piano, and bass, and then we had tenor saxophone and lead trumpet. So we had saxophone, trumpet, and full rhythm section. That is the perfect example of a swamp pop band.
Wow. So is there another swamp pop popular group out there that we should play on the show today?
Ah, wow. That's a good question. I would say the guys that really did Swamp Pop, Fats Domino, remember Larry Williams?
Sure.
Little Richard in his early days, Lloyd Price in his early days. These were artists that really played the Swamp Pop.
Now, Jimmy, you've toured with the greats. You must have some great memories. I'm going to name a couple of people and see if you have anything to say about them. Let's start with Fats Domino.
Well, the incredible thing about Fats is that I loved his music. And at my graduation night in Baton Rouge High School, in 1956, we all go over to the Armory because we're going to have a big celebration graduation dance, and we don't know anything else. And so we hear on the microphone somebody said, "For your surprise and for your enjoyment," and the curtain opens, and who plays for our graduation night but Fats Domino himself?
Wow!
Okay, now who would imagine that 2 years later, I'm kind of co-starring with him at the Brooklyn Fox with Alan Freed. 2 years after that, nobody would have ever told me there was a chance. So 2 years later, when I'm doing that show with Alan Freed, I tell this to Fats, and so he and I just hung out together, and one of the greats, if not the greatest, he was the man.
Jimmy, about 10 years ago, wow, I can't believe it's been that. Actually, it's been about 11 years ago. You and I were in Clear Lake, Iowa, for the 50th anniversary of the passing of Buddy Holly. What were you doing there, and were you friends with Buddy, and did you tour with him, or, you know, what's your connection to Buddy?
Well, again, probably except for except for Elvis Presley and James Brown, I toured or did major shows with everybody who was anybody. So I had done shows with, and I knew Buddy Holly, I knew the Big Bopper, I knew Richie Valens. And so the poignant story about me with Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper and Richie Valens is that I was on another major tour, and the promoter of that tour knocked on my hotel door, and he said, I've got to ask you something. And he had a very, very somber look on his face. He told me what had happened in Clear Lake, and he said, the promoter insists that the tour goes on. I always wondered why that would be, and so whatever. And so he said, would you consider joining that tour? And I think Frankie Avalon was going to do it. So I agreed, and so I left that tour I was on, and they flew me up to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and from there they got me over to Clear Lake, Iowa. And the most poignant thing about me joining that tour after those guys had passed away was getting up on the Greyhound bus, that old-fashioned Greyhound bus, and looking all the way back down the aisle and to see those guys, see their stuff, so much of their stuff still there. And I always wondered, you know, okay, so I'm going to join this tour. What am I going to do, for heaven's sake? So I ended up doing my own hits, and then I played Buddy's guitar, and I did just a tribute to Buddy with some of his songs on stage. And so that was it. But the other shows I did with Buddy, he kind of hung out to himself. But one thing about Buddy and the Crickets and the originals is, man, when they got on stage, just close your eyes and it was just like the record.
I was talking with Sandy the other day, and she was saying that you had a Kalen.
Have you told your fans who Sandy is?
Can I what?
Can you tell your fans? You do have fans, right?
Yeah, I have one right here keeping me cool. It's blowing right on me. It's really good.
Okay. Well, if you can tell your fan who Sandy is.
It's like talk to the wind, right?
Sandy Weeks is my BFF, my best friend forever. And Sandy kind of just wormed her way in. No, I'm kidding. Into my life, became a huge. She was beyond a fan. She was like just a personal best friend. And she ended up kind of taking over and became my ultimate. She became my executive associate. So she handles all, she screens all my calls, and she answers the mail, and she deals with all the promoters, and she's just a great, great lady. Right now, she is doing all the 110% work on my autobiography, but that's Sandy. So go ahead, sir.
She was telling me the other day that you had a Kalen Twins store. You never hear anything about the Kalen Twins. People probably don't even know who the Kalen Twins are, but they had a great song called When. What happened with you and the Kalen Twins?
Well, all of us artists, we all had stories about rehearsals and rehearsals with bands that it'd be the first time we would be with a band. So we all had these crazy rehearsal stories. And without any question, we were all sitting around one day, and what I'm going to tell you is, I can just imagine, this is the craziest rehearsal story I have ever heard. And it's in my book, by the way. So we're all sitting around, so the guys we were telling, I was telling some of my stories about, you know, I did a great rehearsal with the schooled musicians and so forth, and when we got up, they did a great, great rehearsal. When we got up on the regular show, it's like they forgot what they were doing, and that was a 40-minute nightmare for me, but that's nothing. So the Kalen Twins go in, and they've got like an 8-piece orchestra, they told me. The guys all had tuxedos. They had the musician stands, you know. I mean, it looked just like the Glenn Miller, you know. They were all classy guys. And they got all the saxophones and everything. And so the rehearsal goes, it's going to be great. But they found out that, and this happened a lot to us on the road, they found out that there was no time for rehearsal. They'd have to go right onto the stage. But the Kalen Twins, the guy said, oh, we knew this would be great because they all had their we gave them our music, and they're all standing up there. And he said, so they introduce us, and we get on stage, and I counted off. And he said, all I heard was clapping. He didn't hear any musician. He turned around, and he said, all 10 guys just stood up, and they all were just clapping, but they were clapping in rhythm, and they were just clapping while the Kalen Twins were singing with no music accompaniment. True story.
Wow. Unbelievable. Jimmy, your second charted hit, A Letter to an Angel, sounded a little bit like in the background, Pledging My Love by Johnny Ace. Is there any comparison there?
Absolutely. I'm not going to deny it. I loved Johnny Ace. I loved his songs, and everybody loved Pledging My Love. I guess in retrospect, maybe it's a good thing I didn't get sued for that. I don't know. But the one thing I remember, and I put this on all my early records, and only people that really, really, really would be into Jimmy Clint and into the musicians would have picked this up. I'm sure you did. At least we'll find out. But because of the Johnny Ace and that sound, when I started to record that, I told Johnny Vincent of Ace Records, I said, I want xylophones. So that's why I had xylophones in that song, is because of that. So if people ever remember that and listen to that song, I don't know if there was any other swamp pop, much less regular singer of that Teeny Bopper song era, but you didn't hear xylophones, but you heard them on Jimmy Clanton.
Do you have a song that you love that was a big hit from the 50s or 60s, like something that just tore you apart, just go, wow, this is such a great song, and you wanted to play it over and over again?
Wow. I would probably have to say, because I loved it so much, I ended up recording it on a long playing, an LP. But I loved Lee Andrews and the Hearts, Teardrops. And man, what a song. Yeah.
I sit in my room looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals. They cover my window pane. I'm thinking of our lost romance and how it should have been. Oh, if we only could start over again. I know you never forgive me, dear, for running out on you. I was wrong to take a chance with somebody new. I sit in my room looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals, they cover my window pane. I know you'll never forgive me, dear, for running out on you. Oh, I long to do the things we used to do. I'm lonely and I'm blue, yet I'll try to get along without you.
I'm Jimmy J. This is the all-new 1510 WMEX. It's Saturday morning, and Jimmy Clanton is up with us and on the air. Now, Jimmy,
you mean to say people don't get bored of all this Jimmy Clanton stuff?
People love Jimmy Clanton.
Really?
You're a star. Kinda. I'm going to tell you why you're kind of a star. I've got a question for you. Okay.
that's good, Jimmy.
Okay.
Hey, what's your name again?
Yeah. There you go. Okay. I'm going to tell you why you're kind of a star. Don't get me going now here. All right. We've been friends a long time. Okay. So just be quiet over here. I have a question for you. Okay. In the 70s, you became a DJ. Right now, let me just say this. All right. Did you ever invite a celebrity to your home who wore flip-flops, and it was in the winter wearing flip-flops, and then leave with your sneakers? Has that ever happened to you as a DJ?
That happened one time. But I don't know about the inviting to my home, that part. The thing is, yeah, I remember, boy, do I remember that with you and staying at your house in Boston. I was not ready for that weather, but, you know, that's a whole different story.
Now, what was fun about it, I bring it up, folks, when I talked to Jimmy, because he came to Boston to do a show, and he had his stage boots and flip-flops.
Right.
And he was supposed to fly out the next morning, but it was all canceled. So he winds up staying at my house and sleeping on our couch. And then I remember my grandson socking you in the face for some reason. I don't know why. But, you took off. I said, Jimmy, you need sneakers. But I've never got the sneakers back.
Well, they probably still, I don't know, maybe they were just too smelly and I decided not to send them back in the mail. I don't remember what I did with them. I'm sure, besides, you had a size 12 foot, so, you know, I couldn't wear that, so.
1959, you had a song about the two of us. Go, Jimmy, go! Where'd that come from?
I got a great story about that song. Doc Pomus and Morty Schumann, who had also written, they wrote some great songs. They wrote This Magic Moment, and they wrote some Elvis songs. But he kept bugging me about doing a song, so he kept pitching me. So eventually he brought this song, and I said, well, this would probably go well with my swamp pop sound and the way I do things. So I accepted Go Jimmy Go. So I go to the studio, and they got the background singers and they got the musicians. And so we do the song. And so I'm walking out the door, and one of the gals in the background, backup singers, walked over to me with a real kind of a weird look on her face, and she said, She said, I don't want to embarrass you and myself. She said, are you sure you never did this as Go Bobby Go? I looked at her. I said, what? I said, I'm Jimmy. Why would I do a Go Bobby song? So I thought she was kind of weird. So I left. So Go Jimmy Go, incredibly well for me, climbed the charts, and in no time at all, it was in the... All right, can y'all hold on a second? I think the... we forgot about this. We're in my house here. We're going to get this phone. Just hold on. Okay, we got this. So that song went... It's incredibly fast, right up the charts, and got into the top 10 within just a matter of about 3 weeks. And so I was in the middle of a tour or something, and backstage, and Bobby Rydell. Rydell, I never call him Bobby. I always call him Rydell. I said, Rydell, what are you? He said, man, you stole my song. I said, what, are you crazy? He said, yeah. He said, I did Go Bobby Go. And he said, the record company, for whatever reason, decided not to do it. I said, well, you don't want to go and record it as Go Bobby Go now. I said, because my version is already in the top 10. I'm telling you, I never knew that Doc Pomus had done that to me, Doc Pomus and Morty Schumann. But, yeah, they pitched the song to me after Rydell had already cut it. But they didn't do it. So Bobby and I get a big kick out of that.
This is 1510, the all-new WMAX. I am Jimmy J. Jimmy, in 1961, you were drafted and spent a few years in the Army. Now, what was that like? Did the guys in your unit know who you were, and were they listening to your music on the radio? And then what was that like?
I got a whole couple of chapters in my autobiography that Sandy is working on about that. It was like going from I don't know how to describe it, from the pits to the palace. Okay, but for me, I went from the palace to the pits. I never said that before. That's good. I was in a Hollywood studio. I had just won the lead part for a TV series about Archie. And, you know, in the, I'm too close here. About Archie, was it Archie Andrews?
No, it was Archie. Just Archie.
The comic book guy. So I'd won that. And a guy that I grew with happened to call me. God, wait a minute, cell phones weren't even around then.
They wouldn't have had to call that office.
Somehow or another, they got a hold of me out there. They said, Jimmy, you're not even aware of this crisis going on with Khrushchev thinking about bringing nuclear-powered weapons and shipping to Cuba. And JFK has said, you're not going to do it. So there was like this incredible standoff. So the next thing I know, I'm told to come back to Baton Rouge. You're shipping out. You're in full-time Army, and you're going to Fort Leonard, Missouri. And so I went from Hollywood to Fort Leonard, Missouri, as a not even a PFC, and immediately I'm trapped. You talk about a bad dream. And so I got my uniform, and the first time that I get in line to go through chow, okay? And as we're going through the chow line, I hear real loud, where's Clanton? Where's Clanton? And there's this big 400-pound chef. And so I got my name right there on my uniform. And in front of, like, 200 soldiers, you know, and I come and he said, C, yeah, A, B, C. He said, it won't be but maybe a week. He said, you're going to be here, and we'll see how you do as a star here on KP, kitchen patrol duty. That's what they call it, washing dishes. And so sure enough, at 2 o'clock in the morning, now, you know, a musician is just getting home at 2 in the morning. I'm being pulled out of bed, and I'm washing dishes. I'm telling you, overnight, from Hollywood to Fort Leonard, Missouri.
Movies. Talk about them. Tell us about them. You are a movie star.
Oh, gosh. You know what? You're killing me, man. You're killing me. I had been, somehow or another, I think maybe it was my Louisiana accent that I really, really had. It was so strong, you know. And like I did a lot of shows with and for Alan Freed. And Alan just took to me. I'll be honest with you, I really believe that I was, the way things went, that I was his favorite white single artist, you know. So when he did shows, I was on so many of his shows, he would have me fly in at least a couple of days ahead of time and hang out with him. And so he loved me, and he loved Jackie Wilson. And Jackie and I would fly in for shows a couple of days earlier, and we would sit in on WABC on Alan's radio show and just hang out and just do stories. And so one time, I guess by the time we had done a lot of shows together, I was backstage with him. I think it was at the Lowe's Theater in Manhattan, and matter of fact, he walked past me backstage, and he stopped me. He said, "Jimmy," he said, "by the way," he said, "I'm getting ready to go to California," and he said, "I am going to do a new rock and roll movie." You know what? I had to sneeze, you know, I'm human. So Alan Freed walks by, and he said, "I'm going to do a movie," and he starts telling me about it. A story about a guy named Johnny Melody, and he's this, and so forth and so on. And he said, "I would like for you to play the lead. Would you like to be the lead in my movie?" Good heavens, Alan. Yeah, of course. So that's how I actually got the part. And ironically, when I got out to Hollywood, he gives me the script, and on the front it says Johnny Melody. And I said, "Alan," I said, "you give me the script and it's Johnny Melody, but the title of the movie you said is Go Johnny Go." And he said, "Well, you know what just happened with Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry had that Go Johnny Go big hit, Johnny Be Good." And he said it was just a perfect connection, he said, with the movie. And, you know, Chuck's going to be in the movie. I said, "Okay." And ironically, my script with Johnny Melody on the front is in Cleveland in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I don't know if you noticed this morning, Jimmy. You were probably sleeping, but I posted on Facebook, if you could ask Jimmy Clanton anything, what would it be? So I've got a couple of questions for you from some of your fans. Ray Arthur of Fresno, California said, ask him, how did your faith affect your music and vice versa?
Wow. The way my faith affected my music is that once the good Lord came into my life in 1980, I wrote almost overnight some Christian gospel songs, and some of my Christian songs are as popular right now with fans as anything else. And I wrote several of those. And the way my faith affected my music is that the good Lord, after the Beatlemania and the English invasion came through, then fast forward to the late 90s, is that the door opened for me to come back into the music realm, and I became very, very popular again on major shows, and my voice was still in good shape. And so that was how my faith affected my music. It enabled me to come back and just walk in love and let people see, without me beating them over the head with the Bible, let people see through my mannerisms, you know what? There's something different about this guy. There's something he knows, and there's something interesting about him. He's not just a everyday singer. There's more to his life. That's how faith affected my music.
Jeffrey Volman, a DJ in Minnesota, said he met you once at Black Bear and told you he gets lots of requests for your last charted song, Curly. And he wants to know if you ever do it in concert.
To be honest with you, I don't, because with these concerts, the way they are, you've got anywhere from 5 to 7 artists. And with the promoters and with the venues we play, you have to keep the show within 2 hours. And so I pretty much am held to only doing three, at the most sometimes four songs. And so I only do the four songs that really were the most well-known from the radio. And that would be Just a Dream, Go Johnny, Go Jimmy Go, Venus in Blue Jeans, and I do another Sleepless Night. But also, if I do a fifth song, my true fans love the way I did My Own True Love. So that's why I don't do Curly. Those five songs are the most popular worldwide.
Irene from Ontario, Canada wants to know who influenced you when you first started singing. Was there somebody?
Well, the most influence when it comes to other artists, I fell in love with the early records of Ray Charles. And Ray Charles just influenced my swamp pop feel for doing songs. So I would say he was the most influenced artist of my day.
Tina Boucher of Ontario, Canada also wants to know how it was to be on the Alan Freed shows. I mean, was it crazy? Did you know, what was it like for them? I mean, those were big shows.
Well, the thing is that people have to realize that, 1958, okay, let's say, we had no internet, we had no major influence from TV or newspapers. Where I lived in Baton Rouge, I didn't even watch television, and so by the time I got to New York, I didn't even know who Alan Freed was, because he was a DJ in another planet. Going from Baton Rouge and New Orleans, going up to the East Coast was like going to Venus or to the moon. So I didn't know anything about him or about the New York scene or about who the famous DJs were, and it was kind of like on the fly, so to speak. I got to know all of this as I got to New York, and once I signed with this major booking agency and my record became Just a Dream became such a huge hit, it was the promoters that were then starting to put out there, you need to have this kid on your show, the people love him, the fans love him, the girls love him. And so that's how it started. And once I did a show with Alan, and Alan and I just really connected right off the bat in a personal way. That's how I got to know Alan and how his influence was so incredible.
I'm Jimmy J. This is the all-new 1510 WMEX. Jimmy Clanton has been my guest. Jimmy, I want to thank you for hanging out with us. And before we go, naturally, we're going to play Venus in Blue Jeans here. You were in the Army when this came out. Is that right?
No, actually, incredibly so. I had recorded that song before I went in, but we did not consider that to be the A side. In those days, when you go into a session, you recorded three songs, and then the first two were supposed to be side A, side B. So we didn't put Venus out. So when I got out of the Army, I called my record company, and I said, "What do we have? Do we have anything in the can?" And he said, "We only got this one song." And he said, you really didn't think it was an A-side. And I said, well, look, let's just put it out. It's the only way to get out there quickly, and hopefully radio stations will pick it up because Jimmy Clinton is back. And so he said, okay. And so ironically, when he brought it out, the song just went crazy and went top 10 like overnight, and it was very old and in the can. I'd recorded that thing over a year and a half earlier, but that's how that happened. It came out and bam, it just put me right back up on top.
Well, you deserve to be up on top, and you deserve to be up on top to this day. You're a great friend, a great guy. You have an amazing heart. And I know you have an incredible love for the Lord that's keeping you going, and you have some good people around you. You have a new book that's coming out very soon. Well, as soon as it's finished. And we just thank you for hanging out with us today on 1510 WMEX. Thank you, Jimmy.
Actually, it's my pleasure. And, I love doing shows with you, Jimmy, because you're not a typical DJ. When you ask me to do things and you ask me for the for stories and inside information, like a lot of the things that you had me talk about today, I've never done previously on any radio interview. So congratulations.
Thank you, man. Jimmy Clanton on 1510 WMEX.
ponytail. She's a walking, talking work of art. She's the girl who stole my heart. My Venus in blue jeans is the Cinderella I adore. She's my very special angel too, a fairy tale come true. They say there's seven wonders in the world, but what they say is out of date. More than seven wonders in the world, I just met number eight. My Venus in blue jeans is everything I hope she'd be. A teenage goddess from above, and she belongs to me. Teenage goddess from above, and she